This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Steve, I know for the scene that you did a lot of extensive previs to kind of design. Could you talk a little bit about that and the importance of that and how that is helping you with shooting this now?
Sure. Well, the previs I'm no stranger to because on Avatar, the whole movie was, you know, we call it viz-viz, actually, because it's not previs, but it's actually what the shots are going to be like. And so I was involved in that a lot. And so what we did when I first read the script, we reworked the whole opening bridge sequence, and I took my sort of 20 years of second unit directing experience on big action movies and said, how can we up this into this like amazing sequence that's believable but yet really frightening and horrifying? And I thought, well, you know, what's scarier than being on a suspension bridge 250 feet from the water and suddenly the cables start snapping and you have nowhere to go? So we kind of went with that and then figured out a way to build a sequence out of that. And so the previs process was very, very involved, and in fact it allowed us to figure out, we even had these 50-foot techno cranes built in our computer Maya program, so we would know that we would need an elevated platform, put one of them on, another elevated platform, the other, where the ceiling was, how high everything had to be, because it's very difficult and expensive to build all this stuff, and if you don't know it's all going to work for the shots, then it doesn't really work, and you have to imagine 200-foot towers with suspension cables going way up on this bridge, and when you frame for your shots, you have to take that into account. So it was very helpful for us, and it allowed us to get the sequence, which right now, the bridge cracked in half here. This railing is still on. We're going to remove this railing now because we're going to create a computer-generated railing that bends as the gimbal, which is hydraulic operation, hydraulic actuated, will actually bend during the shot, and then our actors will be running around as they see all this stuff happening. So that's kind of what we're setting up for right now.
Can you talk about the fact that the 3D cameras you're using, and we heard that it's like the latest generation?
Yeah, well, we got really fortunate because Vince Pace at Pace Technologies just received the first batch of Arri Alexa cameras, and they're the latest digital cameras from Arriflex, and they're amazing cameras, and because of that, we've been able to shoot in low light levels and all kinds of things, and it just has a very cinematic 35mm film look to them that is just, I'm really impressed with it. And we've been very fortunate to be able to use these cameras on this project and one of the first films to have that. And so it makes it just look fantastic.
The things that are trying to break new ground with visual effects, since you've been at the forefront with stuff like camera, it's done things, it's pushed the boundaries. Have you tried to push the boundaries with this in certain ways?
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm a filmmaker first and foremost, and for me it's all about the characters and the story. So when I first read the script, I said, we got to care about these characters, care about the story, but at the same time, I want it visually dynamic and stunning because I think that the fans deserve everything. And if you give them great cinematography, good performances, you have cutting-edge technology, suspense, horror, dynamic action sequences, then it's a fun popcorn movie. And, you know, you don't have to compromise on any of the things. You know, you could take a camera and shoot a scene. And you can take a camera and shoot a scene and make it beautiful. It doesn't cost anything more. It just needs the talent of where to put the camera and how to light it and do that sort of stuff. So my approach has always been, I'm a filmmaker. Let's make this into a visual storytelling and make it cinematic. And by using all those techniques and being cost effective in how you do it, you can make something that would be a ridiculously expensive, you know, a $200 million movie. You can do the same things at a certain point. You just have to be very smart about how you do that and how you use your resources and how you have the impact and the visual aspect of each of the sequences, and that's what we've been doing on this project.
Well, the thing about Final Destination, besides all that, is the death scenes. I mean, the explanation points, if you will, seeing the other films, how did you want to, what's your vision for upping the ante, if you will?
Well, what I felt is that, to me, the more horrific they are, unexpected, but yet believable in shocking and like, oh my God, that I could really see that happening to somebody, the better I thought they would be. And the suspense, too, as well. It's not just about showing the horrific death. It's build up, what's going to happen, how are they going to die, and when you finally see it, if you care about the characters, then it's even that much more important when they die, because suddenly you feel for somebody as opposed to some character you don't have any interest in, and then they get killed in some gruesome, spectacular way. That's not as impressive as you really care about this character and this poor person suddenly gets killed. But we have plenty of very innovative ways of, ending people's lives.
That being said, in Final Destination, the deaths are not they're they may be gruesome, but they're still fun.
Exactly. So, there's a fine line between.
And does the 3D allow you to have more fun with that, or do you, does that, you know, do you
absolutely.
See yourself going a little grittier with 3D?
No, absolutely. The 3D allows you to have even, you know, it allows you to have some 3D moments. You know, and I'm a firm believer in using 3D to enhance the movie, not as gimmicks. But there are times when you can enhance it in such a way that makes somebody jump. It's like the sound cue in a horror movie. You know, real quiet, the person's dead, their hand jumps up and the whole audience screams and they love it. You know, that's what they go to these types of movies for. You can do the same thing with 3D. As long as you don't do every shot as an eye poker and get ridiculous with it, it's a great way to use the medium and to exploit the advantages that a 3D movie like this can give you.
Well, I was speaking of that, James Cameron has been vocal about some films he feels aren't using 3D well or are being too gimmicky. Did you go to Jim before this and say, I'm going to go make this... This semi-gimmicky horror movie and get his blessing, or have you talked to him at all?
No, we keep moving. I'm sorry, we've been told we got to move over there. They're moving equipment so we can walk and talk.
Yeah, actually, yeah. No, Jim's a good friend of mine, and I keep in touch with him all the time. And he's, you know, his feeling and my feeling as well is 3D is like a cinematographer using lenses.
Right.
You can have some movies that cinematographer, like a Tony Scott movie, really telephoto lenses, very stylistic, commercial-like, and there's other directors, you know, like either Jim Cameron or Stanley Kubrick, who use really wide-angle lenses, or Brian De Palma. Nothing wrong with either way. Same thing with stereo. You can have a real gimmicky 3D movie where everything comes at you, or you can have a much more restrained movie in 3D like Avatar, where it was just more an immersive experience. And this film kind of does both. When we have our dramatic scenes, it's not getting in the way. It's there, and it feels very lifelike, but it's not over the top. And then when we have some of our death scenes and some of our other action scenes, we open it up a little bit. So you kind of, it's the best of both worlds, I'd say.
The format's really growing and changing in so many ways, a lot because of Avatar. Since Avatar, what are some of the differences that you're dealing with on this film? Are there adjustments or the things?
Well,
that
actually, because of the new camera that we have, it's actually in some ways more difficult than on Avatar because it's a much more bulky camera that is a lot heavier in weight. It's more cinematic, but it's just a, you know, we have a 100-pound camera with a guy hand holding it to get some handheld dynamic shots. Then on Avatar, I just took the rig and it was like 30 pounds. It was much easier to deal with. So, you know, in some ways, it was a step back because of the newer cameras. But the newer cameras are so spectacular, it's worth those sacrifices in order to make it all work. I'm sorry, there.
You mentioned with the new cameras that it's, you could get like a lower light. Are there other technical advances?
It looks more like film because this is getting really technical, but the depth of field and the image plane size is the same as 35 millimeter, so you get the nice shallow depth of field that a 35 millimeter film would have, whereas the earlier cameras are more like a video camera where you don't have as much depth of field. You have greater depth of field, which means everything's in focus with the video cameras, whereas the film cameras less is in focus, and the selective focus gives it a more filmic look, and that's what we're doing on this project.
Now, something like that, doesn't that sort of possibly add more time to the schedule when you have to really go in there and get that depth of field?
The time is more the bulk of the cameras. Being so heavy, it takes longer for them to rig it on another, you know, beam or another camera crane or something.
You can notice we have two camera cranes. We have two identical camera systems, which is actually four cameras total, because each rig has to have two cameras for the left and the right eye. But what this allows us to do is we can have one lens on one camera and another lens on the other. And normally when you make a movie, in a normal 35mm movie, you can switch a lens in like 1 minute.
They just put another lens on and you're ready to go. In 3D, it takes at least 10 minutes to change a lens. So what we do is we think in advance, say, okay, I need a telephoto lens on this camera because that's going to be my next shot. In the previous shot, I have a wide angle lens. That way I'm not slowing the production by trying to change lenses. You know, you just learn a lot of things like that. It's not impossible, but it is, you know, challenging in trying to deal with the technical difficulties of shooting in 3D. But I love the format, and I've been working with it for over 7 years now, and I think it's fantastic.
How do you think this
is?
This is daytime, yes. All of these giant lights around, when you get upstairs on top of it, feels like it's a total daytime, you know, overcast Vancouver afternoon.
How do you explain to people that this movie is going to be different from the other Final Destination?
Well, the big difference in this movie, I think, is we spent an enormous time, and this is straight from the top of the studio as well as myself and the producers, enormous time casting it and finding the right actors to fill the description and the characters in the script. I felt, if I'm going to do this, I want to do this with believable, real you know, characters that you care about. And we got lucky because we got an amazing group of actors that all of them are fantastic, and I've had a joy working with them, and it's been, I think it's elevated the series, you know, back to its roots, where, you know, it isn't just camp acting and cheesy. It's believable characters in really scary situations dealing with this you know, supernatural force that's killing people, and they don't know why, and what do you do? And so I think that aspect of it for me, above anything, has elevated, in addition to my visual style. I mean, if you look at the movies that I've worked on and done second unit, they all have a very distinct visual style that, you know, is part of me, and I can't make a movie without that. So, you know, I've injected as much of that and making it much more dark and cinematic and horror-like in the climax, and you know, contrasting that with our daytime scene here where you think it's an ideal, beautiful day, but then suddenly a bridge collapses, and that's a nice contrast and irony by juxtaposing those types of themes. And so I feel that, you know, doing that, it's elevated it to a manner, or, you know, slightly higher than what the previous one was.
With a film franchise like this going into the fifth film, it's easy for a franchise to sort of run out of steam. But it seems like with your fresh set of eyes, you're able to come in and inject some new energy into it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we had a great crew because everybody has been giving 100% on this to try to make it as good as we possibly can. And again, you know, I'm a big fan of horror movies. I'm a big fan of action movies. And I'm doing this because I love movies. And, you know, I'm putting all of that energy into it to make it fun, because that's what these movies are. They're fun popcorn movies.
Has it helped to sort of have some other people? I know Ariel Shawn worked on some of the other
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's great. I mean, yeah. We had, you know, same costume people. We've had, you know, all kinds of people in the woodwork. So I worked on the first one, or I worked on the third one, or whatever. So it's great to have that continuity and that sort of respect, because, you know, the first thing I did when I was approached to direct this movie is I sat down and rewatched every single movie back to back to see what did I like, what did I not like about each of the movies. And it was a very interesting experience to spend, you know, over four hours watching every single one in a row like that. And you learn a lot when you do something like that. And I realized, well, there's really good aspects about the films with this particular area, and I think this area could be improved. And I just tried to make it all work, but at the same time, take it with a new, fresh, you know, set of eyes that is me, and try to inject my vision into what I think this should be.
What is your visual style? How would you describe it?
My visual style is Steve Quayle. No, I don't want to be arrogant or anything, but I would say my visual style is kind of, I like the cinematic aspects of you know, gritty realism, in the sense that I want it to, you know, hyper-realism. You want it to feel and look real, but at the same time make it interesting. And the big challenging from a cinematographer, big challenge is, the more real you make it, the uglier it looks, because real life and lighting doesn't look very glamorous. And you make it beautiful and glamorous, and it looks fake like a Hollywood movie. So you kind of have to justify. Every once in a while in real life, you see a beautiful sun going through a window and it's backlighting somebody. You say, okay, I remember that. That looks amazing and it's beautiful, but it's real. So let's inject that into the movie and figure out a way to do that. So it's kind of a hybrid of that, and also focusing on the characters so you believe what they're doing and try to get in the reality of them and not be, you know, over, you know, you don't want your energy focused on all the technical aspects so you lose sight of the characters and the story and what they're going through. Because if you get it all, then it's a home run. If you only get the visuals, it's boring. You know, you don't care about the people.
Can you talk about, like, the fact that you cast some comedians, you know, in, I guess, serious roles?
Well, absolutely. Well, the beauty on that is I've always felt that if you cast funny actors who are good actors, they'll inject and bring the humor. If you cast just stand-up comedians, they'll be stand-up comedians and won't have the chops to do the acting. So we always approach it with serious, but yet get the humor out of it. And people like, you know, PJ or David Koechner, you know, they're fantastic, and it's a joy to work with because they add so much to it. But at the same time, they're really good actors, so it's a lot of fun. And the thing I liked about the second Final Destination is the humor that it had. And I felt if we could inject some of that, but yet some of the seriousness and the visual style in the first one and the third one, you know, kind of do a hybrid of that, I think that would be the best of both worlds. And that's what we've done on this one as well.
On the last film, which was done in 3D, did you watch it and sort of cringe and see, like, moments you're like, man, blah, blah, you know, they should have done this? Or were you sort of like, I can raise the bar here?
I watched it, and there were some things that I understood what they were trying to go for, and there are others that I completely disagree with that type of approach and style. And I thought in some ways it was, the 3D was underused and too much gimmicks, and it didn't flow organically with the film. And you know, I felt that we could do much better than that, and I think we have.
And also, you came into this very this was a very rushed, I guess, you know, Craig was telling us it was very rushed.
Yes.
You know, like all of a sudden they had a release date. They had, you know, everything needs to get going. Could you sort of talk about, you know...
I had a meeting, and the next day I had a meeting when they finally decided to actually hire me. I had to get my cinematographer, production designer, and visual effects supervisor in 3 days from my first meeting. So in 3 days, I hired the three most important people in the whole film, and production designer, just like that. And then we just started full force. I keep hitting your microphone.
I've
I apologize.
Got a good hold of it.
So we went, you know, running, just like day one, because we knew we were already behind, because there was so much work to be involved to do something like this. And having just spent 2.5 years on Avatar, I know exactly what it takes to do complicated visual effects, the previs and all that. So I immediately said, I got to do previs, I got to do it right now, and I'm going to get the same guys I worked with on Avatar to help me, because that's the only way we're going to get this in 2 weeks. And we did this marathon, 18 hours a day previs to get the whole bridge sequence done, like in no time, and it was spectacular. And from there, we refined it and got it to the point when we finally were starting pre-production that we could have all the elements in place so they could actually build all the stuff, make it match what the Lionsgate Bridge is like. We got permission to shoot with one lane of the Lionsgate Bridge actually closed and get some amazing aerial photography of the real bridge that incorporates all the elements of this construction that we had here. So it all worked out great.
What did you bring exactly from the Avatar crew, if anybody?
Well, it's just some...
More the pre-production.
It was the previous company that did a lot of the key, you know, previs, and it really wasn't called previs in Avatar, but we call it post-viz, or viz-viz, because it's just what the shots were. But Brad Alexander, who runs the company, was one of the key guys I worked with a lot, and he's a really talented previs cinematography-type artist, and I worked really closely with him. And then once we got the initial template there, we switched over to a company called Prime Focus, which is the same company that did all the computer screens in Avatar and the 3D, you know, holographic table that they have, the tree and all that sort of stuff. And I worked with them a lot on Avatar, dealing with like 200 visual effects shots. So they're doing the entire bridge sequence, which is spectacular because they understand 3D. They're really talented, amazing people. And, you know, I can't wait to get going in the post-production phase of getting all this green replaced with reality.
They're going to need him on set now.
Great.
Okay. Thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, well, give me a call. Any other questions, we can coordinate that, and I'll be more than happy to talk one-on-one with everybody.
Great. Thank you so much. Best of luck.